Thank you for tuning in to IGH 260. Today's broadcast, lesson number 2 of week number 15, studying Matthew chapter 15, part of a 1 chapter per week, 260-week, 5-year-long study of the New Testament. As we begin, these reminders. To access all of our materials, always free, click the word free at internationalgospelhour.com. For a list of all of these materials, send an email to free@ighradio.com. To receive text updates, text the word IGH free to 55222. That's IGHFREE, all one word, text IGH free to 55222. Here are 2 great ways to study God's Word. First, use our free self-paced online Bible study program. Start now by going to igh.worldbibleschool.org or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. Second, if you prefer to study by mail, call us toll-free at 1-855-IGH 6988 to receive a free 30-lesson Bible study series. You can also request that series by using the contact form at internationalgospelhour.com. In our last broadcast, we studied some of the key terms found in Matthew 15, and we began to summarize the chapter. We will finish that summary and start a more detailed study today. Let's get started. In Matthew chapter 15, verses 29 through 39, we note this. In this, the final section of Matthew 15, Jesus left the region of Tyre and Sidon and returned to an area near the Sea of Galilee. He went up on a mountain, and multitudes came to him. They brought those who were lame, blind, mute, and maimed to Jesus, and Jesus healed them. When the multitude saw the mute speaking, the maimed whole, the lame walking, and the blind seeing, they glorified God. Jesus called the disciples to himself and told them that he felt compassion on the multitude. They had been with Jesus for 3 days, and they were hungry. But Jesus did not want to send them away hungry. The disciples asked an apparently sensible question. Where could we get enough bread in the wilderness to feed such a great multitude? Jesus, reminiscent of what we noted before in Matthew 14, asked how many loaves they had. This time it was 7, and beside that a few little fish. Jesus instructed the multitude to sit, and he took the loaves and the fish, gave thanks, broke them, gave them to the disciples, and the disciples distributed the loaves and the fish to the multitude. Everyone ate, and everyone was filled. This time they took up 7 large baskets full of the remaining food. On this occasion, 4,000 men were fed, not counting the women and the children who were in the multitude with them. The chapter closes with Jesus sending the multitude away, getting into a boat, and traveling to the region of Magdala. Let's begin our study of Matthew chapter 15 in more detail. In Matthew 15, verses 1 and 2, we note this. The chapter opens with another challenge to Jesus. The chapter begins with the word then, meaning generally at that time, but also used as a means to introduce that which follows in time. It appears 160 times in the New Testament, 90 of those occurrences in Matthew's gospel. It served as one more way that the writers of the New Testament, especially Matthew, transitioned to the next topic, the next place, or the next event. The word then, meaning at that time, introduced the next challenge of Jesus by the scribes and the Pharisees. The scribes and the Pharisees are linked together at least 10 times in Matthew, most frequently in Matthew 23. This passage chronicles the third such connection. Earlier in Matthew, in the Sermon on the Mount, Matthew 5:20, Jesus said, "For I say to you, that unless your righteousness exceeds the righteousness of the scribes and Pharisees, you will by no means enter the kingdom of heaven." And in the most recent occurrence, the second in Matthew, some of the scribes and Pharisees answered, saying, "Teacher, we want to see a sign from you," Matthew 12, verse 38. A scribe was considered to be an expert in matters relating to divine revelation. They were specialists in the law of Moses, experts in the law, scholars versed in the law. That's the sense of scribes that they were. In addition to their association with the Pharisees, the scribes were often allied with the high priest and the elders. For example, in Matthew chapter 2, verse 4, we read, "And when he, Herod, had gathered all the chief priests and scribes of the people together, he inquired of them whether Christ was to be born." The literal meaning of the term, "one who writes," does not convey the full intent of its use in the New Testament. Lou and Nida note this, that the word scribe is generally misleading, since that term is usually restricted in meaning to one who writes or copies documents. But in Jewish life of Bible times, the term would have been an expert in the law or a scholar in the Holy Scriptures and not a mere copier of manuscripts. End of citation. But the scribes and the Pharisees did not challenge Jesus in Jerusalem. Jesus was still in the midst of his Galilean ministry. Galilee, the northernmost province in Israel during the time of Jesus, was separated from the southernmost province, Judea, by the middle province, Samaria. The scribes and the Pharisees and all of the Jews who disdained the Samaritans would travel around Samaria in order to get to Galilee. The point? These scribes and these Pharisees appear to have come from Jerusalem just to challenge Jesus, thus indicating the seriousness of their intent to take Jesus to task. That's not at all a first, nor will it be the last. In Mark 3, verse 22, the scribes, no mention of the Pharisees in this verse, the scribes came down from Jerusalem and said that Jesus cast out demons by the power of Beelzebub. In John 1:19, the Jews sent priests and Levites from Jerusalem to ask him, "Who are you?" In this setting, John the Baptizer was the one being investigated. Later, some of the Jews, frustrated at the preaching and teaching of Paul, sent representatives to Caesarea to charge him with many serious complaints. Acts 25, verses 6 and 7. The point? The religious leaders in the first century took very seriously what they viewed as their responsibility to safeguard what they thought was right against what they thought was wrong, and they were willing to travel to take their perceived enemies to task. They did it to John, they did it to Paul, and as we see in this text, they did it to Jesus. As we have noted earlier, the challenges brought before Jesus on this occasion involved the disciples. We have witnessed that twice before in Matthew's gospel. In Matthew 9:14, the disciples of John came to him, Jesus, saying, "Why do we and the Pharisees fast often, but your disciples do not fast?" In Matthew 12, verse 2, the Pharisees said to him, "Look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath." But a criticism of Jesus' disciples was tantamount to a criticism of Jesus himself. Their questions, in effect, were equal to asking, "Why do you allow your disciples to do this?" They explicitly referenced the disciples, but the challenge was directed to Jesus. The specific criticism on this occasion, the disciples did not wash their hands in the traditional elders-approved way before they ate a meal. We will note this in detail when we work our way through Mark's gospel later, but it will be helpful to note his parallel account here. Matthew did not take the time to explain the tradition as fully as did Mark. Why not? Because Matthew's readers would have known what Matthew meant. Mark's readers, in large measure a completely different audience, needed more information and more explanation in order to understand the significance of the scribes' and the Pharisees' criticism. Here's how Mark set the stage for the question the scribes and the Pharisees asked Jesus. The text begins in Mark 7, verse 1, and goes through verse 5. "Then the Pharisees and some of the scribes came together to him, having come from Jerusalem. Now when they saw some of his disciples eat bread with defiled, that is, with unwashed hands, they found fault. For the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they wash their hands in a special way, holding the tradition of the elders. When they come from the marketplace, they do not eat unless they wash. And there are many other things which they have received and hold, like the washing of cups, pitchers, copper vessels, and couches. Then the Pharisees and scribes asked him, "Why do your disciples not walk according to the tradition of the elders, but eat bread with unwashed hands?" Note the additional details that Mark includes. The Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they wash their hands in a special way, holding the tradition of the elders. Pay particular attention to the words, "in a special way." As we have noted in our earlier studies, for the scribes and the Pharisees, this was not a matter of personal hygiene, but rather a matter of purity. Purity, of course, was of paramount interest to God. But their sense of purity was rooted in Jewish religious custom, and not directly in God's revelation. It was a custom, a tradition, initially created and upheld by the elders, but one now maintained by the scribes, the Pharisees, and, according to Mark, all the Jews. Many of the rituals they prescribed were related to things that were designated clean or unclean, or holy and unholy, as specified in Leviticus's prescriptions of priestly duties in the tabernacle and the temple, but not to the average Israelite. The question then was, why do you, Jesus, allow your disciples to go against what everyone else does? That question was asked with this force. Why do you allow your disciples to do what's wrong? The larger context of Mark tells us that the hand-washing issue was but one part of a much larger tradition that included other ritual washings of cups, pitchers, copper vessels, and couches. The Pharisees' concern here, like what we saw concerning the Sabbath, was grounded in good intentions. They wanted to properly revere God's will, but, as before, they went to the nth degree in creating sanctions and ceremonies that violated God's will more than it respected it. Their desire to be obedient, while noble, created a level of obedience that God never required. Much of it was grounded in their assumption that God had revealed orally, in spoken words, things that were not initially recorded in the Mosaic Law, but that were orally passed down and then eventually written by the elders and the rabbis. In our next broadcast, we will take up at this point and continue our study of Matthew chapter 15. This reminder as we close, to use our free, self-paced online Bible study program, go to igh.worldbibleschool.org or click the online courses link at internationalgospelhour.com. We hope that you can join us as we study God's Word together in our next broadcast.